Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 157 for August 10th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes...
We often find that people who prefer the Highland Park 16-year-old prefer the Oladue 16-year-old, and the same for the 12 or the 30-year-old.
That's Stuart Cale, the master brewer at Scotland's Harveystown Brewery. Sometimes it's just too hot for whiskey, and a cold beer would hit the spot better. Stuart has combined the best of both. Details in a few minutes. First, let's look at the news. With just a few weeks of summer left, many distilleries are starting to leak out word about their fall releases. The Glenlivet will be launching its new 25-year-old malt officially in the U.S. later this week. More on that in the next episode. Also, Heaven Hill is getting ready to release this year's edition in the Parker's Heritage Collection. John Hansel of Malt Advocate reports in his blog that it'll be a 27-year-old bourbon, selected, as always, by master distiller Parker Beam. And Larry Cass at Heaven Hill tells me the 1999 vintage of Evan Williams' single-barrel bourbon will be out later this fall as well. The Buffalo Trace folks will be releasing this year's antique collection in October as usual. I talked briefly this week with the Trace's Angela Traver after their initial tasting of this year's George T. Stagg bourbon. It sounds like it should be another good one. Finally, my sources at Beam Global say they'll be following up the Ardmore traditional single malt release this year with a new 30-year-old malt from Ardmore in time for the holidays and introducing a new rye whiskey to carry the Rye One brand. It'll be interesting to see how that compares to the Jim Beam rye that's on the market now. There's also a 150th anniversary edition of Canadian Club coming out this fall. More on that in an upcoming episode. In June, during episode 148, we heard from Michael Urquhart of Gordon & MacPhail about the Benromic Latitudes series of malts. That was the three-malt series marking the distillery's support for the Clipper Round the World Yacht Race. Well, the race is over now. Glasgow's yacht, which was sponsored by Benromic, came in third, but sales of the Latitude Series malts raised £10,000, or about $20,000, for the Royal National Lifeboat Institute. Gordon and MacPhail donated a fiver for each bottle sold to the Institute. Benromic will be one of the sponsors of next year's race as well. And if you've ever wanted to sail around the world, race organizers are looking for crew members. There's a link at the WhiskeyCast website. As I mentioned in the last episode, Morrison Bowmore senior blender Ian McCallum has added a new job to his portfolio. He's been named distillery manager at Auchentoshan, just as the distillery's entire line of malts gets updated with new expressions and bottles.
Interesting thing about Auchentoshan is it gives us a chance to really reinvent the Lowland category. We want to keep our tradition, but at the same time with Auchentoshan, we want to bring a contemporary twist to it. So we want to bring through a modern look, really a modern whiskey that should appeal to hopefully younger age groups as well as experienced whiskey drinkers. So we've created three or four core products in our portfolio. We have a 12-year-old, which replaces the current 10. We have our three wood, which has been available across the US and many markets for a number of years now. We also have the 18 years old, because after listening to consumers, they wanted something between the 10 and the 21, so we felt 18 was a good age. So we brought out what we think is a spectacular 18 years old. And in fact, we put it into the San Francisco Wine and Spirit Competition, where it achieved double gold. Double gold being the highest ever accolade for a Lowland whiskey in San Francisco. And finally we have the 21, which is the piece de la resistance, if you like, the cherry on the cake. Really at 21 years old, it's everything you want from a Lowland whiskey: sweet, succulent, fresh, fragrant, you know, a real collage of flavours that work on the tongue. Perfect balance to it, perfect weight, and I think what's important with Auchentoshan is we show that this is not just a distillery that is been seen as a starter malt whiskey. It really is a distillery that you can feel at home with, regardless of your whiskey knowledge or background.
And these are already available in some markets, but they'll be coming into the US this fall, right?
I believe that they're actually going to be coming to the US sometime in September at the latest, through our distributor Sky Spirits. But we've done launches already in Asia, in Scandinavia and mainland Europe over the last 2-3 months. So I think you'll see a lot more prominence given to Auchintosh.
And you just took over as the distillery manager. What's been involved in the transition for you? Because last time we talked, you were in the blending side of things.
Yeah. Well, I've still retained my position as senior blender with Morrison Bowmore, but I did have a background in distillery management before I came back to blending. And my boss, Andrew Rankin, who's the production director, I think felt that there was just scope there for career development, and offered me the chance to take over at Auchintosh. So that was a great message and honour to receive that from him.
What are your priorities?
Very much priority for me has to be the consistency of our malt whisky portfolio. That is Bowmore, Glengarry and Auchintosh. Not that the distillery in any way is secondary, but you know, there is no such thing as I am in Scotch whisky. It's we are, and it's very much about a team effort. There's a fantastic team in place at Auchintosh, from the brewer, the mashman, the stillman, through the visitor centre staff. So, you know, they're really good at running things on day-to-day basis. So really, still my core is the blending, but obviously secondary responsibility is the management of Auchintosh Distillery.
What in terms of work at the distillery do you plan to do as far as, I know you've got the new visitor's center up and running now, what's it going to take to get more people down to come and see it?
Well, I think that's really part of my challenge, where I've been working a lot more in the public relations side for Morrison Bowmore in ambassadorial roles. It's really to see just how well known we can make Auchintosh. But, you know, a whisky should be known on its merits, and it's not all about show. It really, I think, most important thing is that you have whiskies of distinction. We've achieved that with our new portfolio and range. I think now it's about getting that out there to the consumer. Once the consumer is able to see it, see the quality, taste it, I've absolutely 100% belief that you will see us grow that distillery rapidly.
Just a reminder from a few weeks ago, Auchintosh also redesigned its website as well and is holding a contest for site visitors. The prize, a bottle of 50-year-old Auchintosh distilled back in 1957. There's a link at the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Brandy Library in New York City will hold 2 Spirit School classes later this month, Precious and Rare Scotches on August 26th, and American Whiskies on the 28th. It'll repeat the Rare Scotches class on September 4th, along with an Introduction to Scotch class on September 2nd and 9th. The trade-only Worldwide Distilled Spirits Conference is September 7th through the 10th in Edinburgh. Milroy's of Soho in London hosts a tasting of whiskies from around the world on the 10th. And that same night is the Whiskey Guild's Whiskies on the Hudson Cruise in New York City. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival is September 16th through the 21st in Bardstown. The Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival is over 2 weekends, September 18th through the 20th and the 25th through the 27th. And Whiskey Live Paris is September 20th and 21st. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. And it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at Laphroaig.com. As I'm recording this episode, the temperature is getting close to 90 degrees outside, or about 32 degrees Celsius. And I have to admit that on days like this, a cold beer sounds really good. Fortunately, there are beers that have some whiskey DNA in them after spending time being aged in ex-whiskey casks. The latest on the market comes from Scotland's Harveystown Brewery. Ola Dew makes Guinness look like a pale ale. After spending some time in Highland Park casks, it looks like its namesake black oil. It's not like other dark beers, though. It has a lighter taste, and the influence of the Highland Park adds just the right touch of sweetness to it. And unlike any other beer, Ola Dew comes in three vintages. It's the same beer, but aged in casks from Highland Park 12-year-old, 16-year-old, and 30-year-old malts. Stuart Kale is the master brewer at Harveystown and came up with the beer that's hard to pronounce but easy to drink.
The brewery was originally set up just over 20 years ago by Ken Booker in the grounds of an old farm. And about 4 or 5 years ago, we got to the stage where we needed to move premises. And we moved to our current location about 4.5 years ago. The main thing that helped a lot of that was we won the Champion Beer of Britain at the Great British Beer Festival in 2003 with Bitch and Twisted, and that moved our volumes up quite significantly. And as a result of that, we sort of moved to a higher level of turnover and needed to move to the new premises where we've been, as I say, for the last 4.5 years. And about 2.5 years ago, Ken sold the company to Caledonian Brewing Company. And about 3 months ago, the directors of Caledonian sold their share in Caledonian and bought Harveston, so we are now independent again.
Which is always a good thing as far as brewers go, because it lets you guys really do some unusual things like Ola Dub, right?
Yes. I mean, to be fair, Caledonian were very good, and we operated as a fairly standalone operation, but it's nice just to be back, sort of martyrs of our own destiny a bit, and also just in terms of competitions and things, people sometimes got a bit confused and sort of thought that it was Caledonian when really, you know, it was our beers exclusively that were getting a lot of the awards.
Tell me about the first experience with putting beer into whiskey casks, because I know you'd been doing some stuff with it before you came up with the partnership with the Highland Park guys, right?
Yes, we did. We did it about maybe 4 years ago, using the different casks, the Dalmore cask. And that was the first time that we experimented, and we sort of put it in and tasted it over varying time periods, and found that usually about the sort of 4 or 5 month period. I think the very initial one was about 3 months with some of the ones. And they're currently still being sold. People have laid them down in many instances, and we still see reviews on some of the websites and things that are very good reviews, and that beer is now sort of 3.5 years old.
And Ola Dub is really sort of the first example of a beer with a vintage scotch, or at least with three different vintages of scotch, right?
Yes, the whole idea was sort of to take it to the next level, so we wanted a bit more provenance and kudos about it. So we approached Highland Park, and they've been very supportive and very keen, and they've supplied us with the varying vintages of cask. We've then filled those casks and matured the engine oil for 6 months in those casks, at which point it then becomes effectively the Ola Dew. And they taste those casks and go off the actual sort of optimum time to package, which in practice is usually slightly longer for the 12-year-old and less for the later vintages, mainly because there's more residual flavour in that wood from the older vintages, and it comes back out that bit quicker.
That was my next question. What's the differences between the three vintages in terms of the aging process?
Yeah, it is pretty much that in practice we find that the flavours are come intense and come back out of the wood quicker on the older vintages. So in practice the 30-year-old is in there for about about 3-4 months, whereas the 12-year-old is in there for 6 months.
Now, why did you guys decide to work with Highland Park?
Really because they've got a similar sort of history to us, of being relatively small, award-winning. They were Distiller of the Year, I think, last year. And you know, they've got a very good reputation for award-winning products, which is very similar to ourselves. So we thought there was a nice sort of overlap there. And it's what's nice is Highland Park is a very distinctive whiskey, and it's good to see that the feedback on the vintages from the different Ola Doos tends to tie up with the vintages of the Highland Park whiskies. So in practice, we often find that people who prefer the Highland Park 16-year-old prefer the Ola Doo 16-year-old, and the same for the 12 or the 30-year-old. So it's quite nice that each distinctive character of the vintages comes through into the Ola Doo as well.
I find it kind of unusual, just chuckling for a second, because the Highland Park 16 is not sold in the United States, but the Ola Doo 16 is. It's our only chance to find out what the 16-year-old Highland Park tastes like.
I hadn't actually realized that.
What's the future for this partnership? Is this something you plan to continue on an ongoing basis?
Yes, very much. I'm currently maturing 40-year-old, which will be released probably the start of next year. That was filled about the first batch. Which was filled probably about a month or so ago now, and they are talking about letting us have some 50-year-olds as well. So I think it will definitely be ongoing. And I think what we will probably end up doing is having a sort of stock of the 12-year-old, and then individual vintages will be done on a slightly more bespoke sort of basis.
There's a link to the Ola Doo website at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's just one of several whiskey-influenced beers on the market. Back in episode 62, Ian Millar of William Grant & Sons told us about Innocent Gun, the ale that's used to season casks for the Grant's Ale Cask blend, and gets its influence from those barrels as well. And Scotland's BrewDog has a series of beers under the Paradox label in partnership with Duncan Taylor & Company that uses casks from different regions of Scotland to age its beers. I'll have more on those beers in a future episode. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. You can also leave comments at the Whiskey Cast page of the iTunes Music Store or your favorite podcast site, and you'll find links, the calendar of events, the Whiskey Cast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the Whiskey Cast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.